Once upon a time, in the early days of television satire, Sir David Frost coined a new catchphrase, and now for something completely different. Well, I expect many of you will find this a little different. My name is Colleen Henderson Hayward, and I'm sitting at a table with maybe half a dozen people to discuss something a little bit out of the ordinary. All of my guests here have one thing in common, but as we go through the programme, you will find that they're not so unusual after all. But hey, we're not here to be serious today.
We praise the colorectal surgeon, misunderstood and much maligned, slaving away in the heart of darkness, working where the sun don't shine. Respect the colorectal surgeon, it's a calling few.
The table is weighed down with tea, coffee and biscuits and other goodies, and we'll all be tucking in whilst we explore the world of the ostomate, that is to say, someone who's had an ostomy operation. This is a meeting of a local ostomy group or stoma support group, where ostomates compare experiences and provide mutual support. There are dozens of these groups all around the UK. This one is in Berwick-upon-Tweed, about as far north as you can go and still be in England. A similar group in Flintshire has the slogan Bag for Life, another one has Inside Out, and yet another Bums on Tums. You get the drift. The Berwick group is organised and run by Bobby Minshall. She's sitting here with me today. Hello, Bobby.
Hello, Colleen.
Can we start by describing exactly what a stoma is?
The Greek word means opening, and it's where part of your bowel or your ileum, which is the small bowel, is brought out to the surface of the skin, folded back on itself and stitched on. And what comes out can be either urine, if it is from your kidneys, or it can be poo, which comes from everything that you eat, goes through the transit system of the stomach, the ileum, and then the colon.
And why do people have stomas?
There can be many reasons. The vast majority is normally because of cancer, which is why there are so many colostomates. There are around roughly 120,000 ostomates in the United Kingdom every year. It can vary because people can have it reversed, which means going back to normal plumbing, or they die, which happens to us all at some point. But there are around 65,000 colostomates, which means it's formed on the colon. There are 35 ileostomates, which means it's formed on the ileum, the small bowel, and around 10,000 urostomates. There are also a small number of people with two stomas, but nobody knows how many.
Now, this sounds quite invasive to me, someone who doesn't have a stoma. Can you talk me through the practicalities of what's involved if you are a person who has had this done or to having this done?
Well, there are two ways of doing the operations now. It can either be done with open surgery, where you have a large cut and the go in, fling all your insides out on the table, cut out the bits that are damaged or have cancer in, then sew you back up again after they've made a stoma. But they can also do it keyhole surgery now, which means a tiny cut and you can have tea the same day, which is a very big difference. But only the surgeon can say at the time what method can be used, whether it has to be open surgery or keyhole. Living with it is not that different. You still go to the toilet, we just do it a slightly different way, that's all.
You say that very casually, and someone obviously who has a stoma themselves, but for someone like me that sounds dreadfully frightening. On a day-to-day level, you must have to do many routine things that I don't. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I will spend 5 minutes dealing. I'm greedy. I have two stomas. I have one for urine and one for poo. And it will take me 5 minutes in the morning. I will get in the shower. Every other day, I change a base plate. A stoma bag is made up of either a one piece, which has a bit that attaches the base plate to your body, and then a bag attached to it, either that it's separate or it's all made as one piece. I have two pieces on both my stomas and I change the base plate every other day. So one day I will go in and I will change, take everything off, stand in the shower, have a lovely shower, and then dry myself off and put two base plates on, two bags on, and that's me for the day. And the other day I will just change the bags, still have a nice shower, and then put a fresh bag on, and that's me, I'm done. And I just empty it out in the toilet, same as everyone else, just in a different way.
And presumably you've had an awful lot of support in the early days of your stoma. I mean, your experience now has been for many, many years, but someone who's new would presumably get support and help even when they've left hospital in the management of their stoma system.
Yes, that's a big improvement. I had my first urostomy in 1991 and there wasn't really much support around. There was the Urostomy Association, which was where I gained all my information from and became a member. Nowadays, there's the internet. There's a great deal of knowledge out there. But I still recommend that to new ostomates, they join the Colostomy Association or the Ileostomy Association or the Urostomy, because they have the years of experience. The ileostomy has been on for about 60 years now, that's been going, and the colostomy has changed names a few times, but basically also around 60 years, and the urostomy since the 60s, so also about 60 years going on. So these support groups, they give you that initial support when you first have it. But there are stoma nurses around as well, and their job is to help you through the operation. They will, unless it's an unplanned operation, they will go with you. They will sort out where it's going to be situated so that the surgeon will know where to put, and they will put a mark on it for you, and so that they know where you would be, because some people like high trousers, some people like want to wear low trousers. Especially youngsters who are having an ileostomy, they don't want it in the way. But the stoma nurse is there to help you. But like anything else, funding in the NHS is going down, and it's not an attractive side for the NHS, talking about poo. So stoma nurses now are often sponsored by companies, the same companies who make all the bags.
Can I go back to something you said in that passage, which is so interesting, was the fact that, you know, these have been around for 60 years. Surely in that time, the technology has changed, well, we hope, more than just a little bit. Have you seen personally changes in the way the system is and the materials used?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's been a huge change. In the 60s, people were issued with two rubber bags per year, which they then had to wash out every day. And they were actually attached with a cement onto the body. Quite horrific. And if you go back even further before that, people were using tin cans, glass bottles, all sorts that they would strap onto
Sounds
their bodies.
Horrendous.
But technology has come in and bags have improved. We've all gone from the rubber bags. We now have plastic bags. The plastic bags have improved. They have filters on, which supposedly stop a lot of the smell. But they do help you lead a much better life. Even in my time, since I've had my urostomy, I've seen a big change in the bags. And the comfort of them, of wearing them, is so much better now.
Well, I'm very pleased to announce we have a new pot of tea that's just entered the room. So everybody's very excited about that. You were responsible for setting up this group, is that correct, Bobby?
That's correct, yes. My husband spent 38 years in the RAF and we moved around a lot of places. But we chose to move to near Berwick as our final resting place. And when I arrived here, I discovered that there was no support group anywhere between Newcastle or Edinburgh. And I decided, well, this is what I want to do now that we're retired. I wanted to help others. So I started this group. I talked to the local stoma nurse, who's down in Newcastle, so she's not exactly that local. And she agreed to help me and support me in the initial setting up. And I advertised in the local paper. In fact, I phoned them up and I asked them, would they be willing to put in a free advert for me? And they said, actually, we'll do an interview for you, if you like. And they came along to the house and they did a small interview, half page spread in the Berwick Advertiser and a picture. And they did a very nice introduction, really. And I set the first date, and nobody had contacted me, so I didn't know if anybody was going to turn up or not. And I was absolutely petrified. I was going to be sitting there, having found a venue, which was the local hospice. In those days, they had a room which you could use, and they agreed to let me use the room. So I advertised, and I sat there that evening. And amazing, it had two entrances. And I was going from one entrance to the other. And 26 people came through the door.
Wow, 26 people. You must have been absolutely elated.
I was absolutely elated and petrified because I'd never done anything like this before. This was totally new. All I was relying on was my stoma knowledge. And there were people walking and saying, oh, I didn't know you had a stoma. They knew each other, but none of them knew. And people are afraid to talk about stomas. And so it was quite surprising for people to say, wow, I didn't know you had one.
Yes, we talked about the subject of taboo earlier. I have 100 questions that I could ask Bobby, but I'm very conscious that we have a room full of excitable people with cups of tea and biscuits, and I'd like to switch to them if I may. First of all, I'd like to pin down your husband, who is here today, Ken.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sat here with Ken now, Bobby's husband, and before we came on air, Bobby was telling me how Ken has been her absolute rock and how he has provided her with all the support that she needs to help her manage her daily life. So, Ken, I'd like to ask you, in what ways do you think you have helped your wife?
More than anything, I don't know, it's interesting, more than anything, probably just being there, just being supportive, being a bit more relaxed about things. I go all the years and years ago when Bobby had first had a cancer and then had her first stoma, which was the urostomy, and you support your family. Whenever you see somebody, a child or your parents or your wife or whatever, in pain, you support them in any way that you can do. And it means that you take the pressure off them, you try and relax, you try and make sure, particularly in Bobby's case, make sure you're near a toilet if necessary to get to one. You make sure that the children around you, your children, are aware of what's going on. It's just being normal. It's trying to keep things as normal as possible and keep your family flowing. I can't really give many other answers than that.
That normality seems to come very natural to you. I can definitely tell that. But how has it changed your life on a practical level?
That's a difficult question.
Insurance.
Yeah, probably all sorts of there's lots of little things it changes. You have to have a routine, I think, is the first thing. When you come to stomas, you have to know that in the mornings there's going to be showers, there has to be time to prepare, to get ready. If you're going abroad, if you're going on holiday, you have to be more prepared for that. You have to be prepared to take a bag, you have to be prepared to take a rucksack full of stoma accessories. You have to prepare to sort out the insurance. You have to be prepared. It's preparation for everything. Wherever you're going, you have to be ready for, for the bits and pieces. You always have to be ready in an emergency because one thing you get with stomas is occasionally you might get a minor leak. And so you have to be quite willing to say, OK, we've got a leak, let's move across. It's being calm about things rather than panicking. And I think that helps more than anything. But, everyday life, preparation and be ready for it.
You say it so effortlessly, but I think you've hit the nail on the head by using the word normality. Because actually, anybody living with a chronic condition or with a medical condition, that's all they ever want. They just want to be
that's
normal.
Right.
And as you say, I think the planning part of your role is absolutely instrumental to Bobby's comfort. So she doesn't feel afraid to go out and catch a train or a plane or whatever it is?
I think the planning's from both sides. I mean, because she has to get all her kit ready. She has to make sure, as I say, she has the bags, the cleaners and everything else. I think one thing about stomas is it's a kind of taboo subject. And so when you get to that, nobody wants to talk. Everybody thinks of older people my conception used to be of older people in old people's homes, whereas you used to walk down the corridor and it stank. And that's the way stomas were. Nowadays, the preparation is being prepared, getting everything cleaned, getting everything there that makes life normal so that they seem normal. So you don't have that thing. You don't have the worry that something's going to smell. You don't have the worry that you're going to leak. It's just being ready to do things. It's being there supporting her for everything.
I think taking the fear out of life,
that's probably
is absolutely, what you do is absolutely magnificent. And I can imagine lots of people listening to this would wish they also had a Ken.
No, normality is everything. Normality is everything. Keep things to normal. You walk around town, for example, and we all realise that if you've got, say, 1 in 500 people have a stoma, you would never know who has. And that's the whole idea of keeping things normal. And so with your own family in the same way, you want to keep it as normal as possible. Then your partner doesn't feel psychologically put off. Part of life is the psychological feel that somebody is looking at you and say, God, you're abnormal, or, oh, you smell, or something like that. So the reality is to keep things as normal as possible. And it goes down to even the grandchildren. We have our little granddaughter, Florence, and she's just turned 4, but she would go into the toilet with Bobby and just watch things. And it's totally normal to her. At first she goes, oh, that's weird. You know, that's unusual, Grandma. But now it's part of life, and I think too many people have been afraid of it as a taboo. So normality is everything, isn't it? And it's not just... not for yourself and not for me as a partner, but certainly for Bobby and for anybody who has a stoma, they've got to keep it normal.
Life goes on.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what you're saying. And your family life goes on, which I think is so important.
Oh, it's everything. It's everything. But it's just having a normal life. You have something like stoma, it can be life-changing. But it isn't. I mean, as we were probably Bobby's already told you, is we go school, we go skiing, we go on holidays, we play around with the grandchildren and everything else. Nobody would know, really, if you looked around as the way Bobby plays with the grandchildren, you wouldn't know there was a problem there. The biggest thing is opening up to people and saying, yeah, I've got this, and letting other people realise that there's not a problem, it's not taboo.
Would you say that in a funny way, therefore, Bobby's condition has actually made you live life more full, or that you have actually gone out there and deliberately maxed it out because of this situation?
Almost certainly. We just do things. We live life, you know. You realise, as I say, I go back to probably in the 80s, and you would go into town, and then when Bobby had a problem, and an incontinent problem at the time after cancer, you would constantly be looking for somewhere to stop where you could go and have... she could use the toilet, she'd go for a wee or something else like that. And it was constant. And you realise how much that affects your life. And so you've got... if you can take that, once you have the operation, your life suddenly changes, and you can do things, and you have control to do what you want. Whereas beforehand... as a partner, you are almost led to tears. When you see somebody you're married to, somebody who's very important to you, under so much stress, emotional stress, you realise that when it's put right, that everything's fine. You get and have a life, there's no problems. All the guys will tell you is once they've got something like this, their lifestyle changes. You go back to do all sorts of things that you never thought was possible, but you live a normal life. All right, there's a little bit of playing around with the bags and everything else like that, but you have a normal life, and it doesn't affect your partner. In fact, it makes your partner's life better as well. And I think that's one thing Bobby keeps forgetting. It's not just her life that's better, it's made my life better.
I'm just gobsmacked at what Ken's saying here, because I think it is absolutely magical. And the fact that you can sit here and say, stoma has improved your life and as a consequence of it, your togetherness is much more pronounced than it was before.
Almost certainly. I mean, in our case, yeah, I think it just depends on the characters. Because with Bobby and I, it's made us stronger. It's certainly made our relationship stronger. You fight for each other. I can understand as well as other people, because of the taboo nature of it, that it causes rifts or causes problems. I've talked to people on the phone who've come up, we're about to have stomas, and have asked the question, you know, how does it affect the partner? And as far as I'm concerned, I look at it totally in a positive way, rather than a negative way. And life is far much better, far, far better.
Ken, thank you so much for that.
You're more than welcome.
I'm sat here now with Frank, who has been listening patiently to the rest of us going on this morning. And we're coming at it from a slightly different angle now, Frank, because you actually don't have a partner. And we've talked about Bobby and Ken and the strength of their relationship and the way that relationship is so supportive. How do you manage being on your own?
Firstly, I manage by coming with my stoma situation, by coming to meetings such as this. I have somebody around the table who I can talk to and share my problems with. It's basically comes down to that. You see, we're all different people. Now, I view my stoma from my angle, and the others view it from another angle. I can't quite recall how many manufacturers there are, but there are that many different bags. Bobby brings in a representative at each meeting, and we see their different types of bags. And either Bobby or the stoma nurse can say, or even the representative can say, take this one and try it. But if you talk to the people around the table, they're the ones who have tried it and are still trying it, or have got used to a bag.
So that knowledge is on a practical level, that's what you're saying.
Yes.
It's all very well someone standing up and saying, well, this type of bag is going to do X, Y, Z. But in actual fact, you need the experience and expertise of your fellow group members in order to get that insight. Mm. And has that caused you, therefore, to make changes to the way you manage yourself? Or have you learnt things here and then gone away and thought, right, I'm going to do that because that's what a trusted colleague has recommended?
Yes. Well, first of all, let's split this into two parts. One is the bag, the external application, and the other is what's left inside.
Okay.
And this is your digestion. Bobby brought along a dietitian. And you see, we get advice from both sides. We hear people talk about what they can eat, what they can't eat. I have a bit of a problem with the build-up of wind. And I'm slowly winning on that. It's building up less and less. But that started off with... It was some while ago. Now, Bobby and a stoma nurse saying, cut out this and cut out that and see if that makes a difference. So you get advice from the dietary side.
So what is a complete no-no for you from a food point of view?
I don't think we've actually found that yet. It's rather a small amount of everything.
Is it just the volume of what you're eating then that has made the difference?
Yes, my basic instinct earlier in life has been, if it's on the plate, eat it.
Clean your plate, as Mum used to say.
Whereas nowadays, I sort of keep it down to, well, use a smaller plate.
And does that mean you eat more frequently during the day?
Not more frequently, perhaps a little at different times.
Do you ever feel hungry?
No, not again from the hunger point of view. It's more how long it will take to pass through the body, build up the gas, and then I can deal with that problem at a more convenient hour rather than 2 o'clock in the morning.
And whilst other people in the group may not have the same problem, and they have different problems of their own, is it just the fact that you are all in this kind of comradeship that it is a condition that you all share, even though it manifests itself differently?
That's asking me, why do the others come here? I think they come here for the same reason I do, is that they learn something each time. They want to discuss their problems or the way they handle their bag with the other people. And we do, we openly discuss it.
That's fantastic. And yes, you condensed my awkward question down to a fine line. I don't blame you for that. And how long have you had your stoma?
Just over 4 years.
So fairly recent then.
That depends on how heavy you let the stoma weigh you down. If we all try to accept our stoma, deal with it, and then forget it. Yeah. And I think the majority of people that come here do that.
Well, that's a testament to the characters here and also the group, and what a way to view life with a change. You just adapt to that change and move on.
Mm.
Thank you, Frank, very much.
That's okay. I'm known as a joker in the pack.
I'm with John from the group now, and earlier, John, you mentioned that you had a stoma and then you had it reversed.
Correct.
That's quite interesting. Would you just tell us a little bit about that?
Well, when I first had the major operation, and a consultant afterwards turned around and said, you've probably stopped like this for a year, and then we'll do tests to see if it's feasible to reverse it. I says, fair enough. So I went the year, had all kinds of tests done to see if the bowel could be reversed back to normal. And after all the tests was done, I'm not going into detail of them. May I say this, from day one, I've been put at ease by the National Health Service. They've been fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
I'm so pleased you said that.
They made me at ease from day one. But never mind, I had the reverse, and the bowel did work. But when I went out for a walk, acid was coming away from the bowel and it was burning me bottom, and it was very, very uncomfortable. And I was getting a discharge, and this is how open the group is. I was having to wear a lady's liner in my underwear because of the discharge. I went for about 9 months that way, and when I went to see my consultant, he says, you're in a lot of pain, John, aren't you? I says, I am. He says, how did you manage the stoma? Ileostomy, that's what I have. I says, it was no problem. And it was on the Monday I seen him. He said, would you like to go back to the way you were? I says, too true, Ord. I says, it didn't bother me one iota, as the Geordie would say. And this was the Monday. He says, give me a minute. He went away, come back. He said, what about next Tuesday? Come in, we'll reverse it. That's how quick it was. I says, marvellous. And I've never looked back.
That's an amazing story. I think particularly to hear your candid words about having to wear a lady's liner, which, as you say, is a huge, a huge, you know, point that, you know, in this very tricky subject.
Well, it educated me in the sense you just took things in life for granted, and ladies have had this all their life, and you never give her a thought. A man didn't. And when it happened, and I was having, and I said to the wife, I says, hey, I says, you've had a heck of a life with that, but you got, you just took it as natural. Now, me with an ileostomy, I don't even know it's there. I just don't know it's there. I do what I want. I garden, turn a garden over, I do everything. Plant, cycle, I go swimming, and I just don't know it's there. Where before, when I had to wear a lady's liner, and I met a chap that had had the cancer operation a year before me, and he was older than me, and he's saying, how are you doing, John? I says, not too bad. And I tell him the complaint I was having, a discharge and acid burning me bottom. He says, can you get the chance to have it reversed back? I said, yes. He says, do so. He says, because I've been going years now where I have to have a ladies' liner in my underwear. And that made my decision quite easy to have it reversed back. And I've never looked back, as I say.
We all deal with things in different ways, as you've said. And I think what one person can tolerate is different from what someone else can tolerate.
Yeah.
And for you, the decision you took was personal to you, wasn't it?
Very much so.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, we're all striving for the same thing here. And this is what I'm picking up in this group most of all, is that everybody just wants to live normally, happily and safely. So now you've really got a really active life, John, and I hear you're going swimming.
That's quite correct. I kind of wear a Speedo, not that it would bother me, like, the days of...
Mark Spitz.
But I just wear short trunks, and they just come up to the waist, and my ileostomy is below that. And the filter that Bobby mentioned to you when she was speaking, you have a tag... A little sticky plaster affair, and you just put it over the filter, and that stops water getting into your stoma, and it's no problem.
Were you confident from the first time you stepped in the water, or did it cross your mind, oh, hang on, I could have a problem?
I was a bit hesitant, and the only thing I didn't do, I didn't dive in.
Yeah,
I went down the steps.
Yeah, you didn't do any bombs.
No. But... it doesn't bother me in any way. And when I'm cycling, you can get added strips that you can put around your stoma for extra protection to keep on. But I never use them. I just use it as it is, and I have no problem.
So it's just having the confidence to try things and see how they work for you and adapt and change as if you come across a problem. But the key thing is never to stop trying. Would
definitely
you say that?
And it's easy for me to say, because I can be open, I can speak with the people, and the finest thing that ever happened was to come to this group, the people that's here, Bobby, her husband, and the other people that's in the same boat as me. They're a good crowd, and life as it is now, we'll often say, the art of conversation is gone. Because everybody walks about with a mobile phone. And when I go shopping, and they'll say to me, are you on the internet? I'll say, hey, man, I've still got carrier pigeons. So this group does speak. And as Ken says, you can be talking about, well, medical terms, but then we'll end on talking about somewhere abroad. And it's a good morning. It's a real good morning.
Wonderful to hear you say that, John. Thank you so much for your story.
You're more than welcome.
I've got Robert next to me now, and we're talking toilets. Of course, we're in a stoma group. We would be talking toilets. But can you tell us, Robert, you've just been talking about some of the difficulties or challenges that you have about just using public facilities?
Well, when you go to the public toilets, maybe it's not the ladies, but the gents, you all stand in a line there. But if you want to change your bag or you've had a leak or anything, you can't just stand there and drop your trousers in the middle of the line, can you? Because the floor's soaking, the taps is over there, the dryer's over there. You're nowhere near any facilities that you need. So that's why you need to go into the disabled toilets. And I think it's a good thing. Mind, there's some of the disabled toilets, the floor is wet in there as well, you know, but it is a lot easier when you've got the hand basin next to you there, your hand dryer there, you can lay your stuff out, you know, your new bag and such like. You can lay all that out without anybody bothering you, do your business, put your bag in the bin, and off you go again, you know. That's about... basically it, you know.
So do you tend to think about your day and the journeys that you make and the places that you visit from going from, am I going to be safe in this toilet, or have they got facilities, or if I park here, how far is it to the toilet, or if I go to a wedding reception, are they going to be, you know, are you constantly thinking about this aspect of your life?
Yes, yes. If you're going away for the day, you think, well, right, we'll go to Morpeth today, or we'll go to Edinburgh. Is there a stop in between if need be? Or when you get to wherever you're going, is there toilets available near to the street? You know, you don't have to go up three or four floors. And as Bobby said there, Marks and Spencer's or somewhere like that, because by the time you get up them four flights of stairs, well, the job is wasted, you know, because you've leaked out and it's all over your clothes, so your day is practically wasted unless you take a change of clothes with you, you know.
Can I ask you then, it seems like a very stupid question really, but can I ask you then, do you still feel like you need to wee or you need to poo? Do you still have those sensations?
No, well, basically it's, I don't know about everybody else, but mine is just does it all the time, you know. It's, I can't think, you know, even when I'm changing the bag, it's leaking out. I can't, it doesn't wait an hour or 2 hours, or you think, oh, I'm going to need to go to the toilet. It just comes out, you know.
So it's a time factor then, really, yeah, more than a feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
And does that therefore stop you from taking, you know, 3 pints down the pub, because you think to yourself, well, if I go out and have 3 pints down the pub, I'm going to end up needing the facilities and I don't know what the facility is going to be like. Is that also part of it?
Yeah, because as you say, if you go to the pub or somewhere like that, have they got the facilities for you to get into, you know? And if you mention it to them, some of them say, you know, look at you as though you wasn't right in the head, you know. Oh, what do you want that for, you know? But you've got to need it. It's got to be there. That's what I always say, you know. I know everybody is different. They can wait a long time or whatever. But if it's not there, you can't use it. So what do? You have to move on to another place or go outside, use the public toilets, come back in again if they're near at hand. But if they're not, well, that's it, you know.
Would you say that before you were quite a private person, and the thought of then being in a situation like you are now, where you're having to discuss these things in the open, has actually been a turnaround for you?
Yeah. Good turnaround, yes, as the lads were saying there. You know, you come to these meetings and everything. Before, I would never, you know, I was sort of a loner person, if you know what I mean. But now we're talking to these people, and the other ones that's not here today, that you feel as though you're among friends and you can tell them anything, and that's it, as the saying goes, you know. Yeah.
But also, I'm a stranger today, and yet you've told me perfectly, and so therefore you must have changed your outlook a little bit in life terms of just being honest and open. Has that spilled into being honest and open about all sorts of things, or is it just...
Well, sort of in general, yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, because, well, now you feel more, I don't know, since you've been in the group, you feel more that you can talk to other people, and as Bobby said, well, your grandchildren and that, let them see it, let them know what's going on, you know, and it does help, yes, uh-huh.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much.
Okay, now, Jess.
We've got Bobby back again, and I know we've had you speaking about the objectives and vision for the group, Bobby, but we're here to talk about you now. I understand that you were 29 years old. Is that right?
28 when I had cancer.
And you were given weeks to live?
My cancer was discovered, it's actually cervical cancer, and it was discovered in 13th of February 1985, and I was told that I wouldn't meet Christmas.
What a shock.
It was a real shock. I had a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I was living abroad because my husband's in the RAF, and I was sent back to England for treatment on my own. He was refused leave. And I had two friends, one who looked after my older daughter because they lived above us and she was at school, and another friend who looked after my two-year-old.
And what happened next?
Oh, well, I was sent back to London via Luton, and they told me I had to get off at a specific station, and when they got there, I found they'd sent me to the wrong one. I'm not a Londonite, I don't know London, I'm a country girl. And so I took a taxi, but I didn't have much English money because we were living in Germany. And this fare was wrapping up and up, and this taxi driver was prattling on, and he was saying, and he asked me why I was there, and I explained, and he said, oh, my mother had that, don't worry, you'll be fine. And we finally get to the hospital, and he says, here's your first bit of luck, love, no charge. And I have never forgotten that.
What a fantastic taxi driver he was, and that's because his mother had had the same thing.
Yes.
A random act of kindness, they call it.
That's right. And and a strange little afternote to that was, I'm a volunteer for the Colostomy Association, who have a 24-hour helpline, and I went down for initial training to see if I was suitable, and the person doing the interview used to run the black cabs in London, and he said it must have been one of his guys.
Things come round, don't they? They really do come round.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here today, and I happen to know that you were 60 just a couple of weeks ago. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you've outlived everybody's expectations, and there's two stomas that you have saved your life.
Without a doubt, and my sanity. After I had cancer and I had a radical hysterectomy, I discovered that the cancer was in the age of what they'd taken, so I had to have radiotherapy. And in the 80s, this was far more widespread damage to the body than it is now. And it fried my bladder, basically, and I became pretty incontinent. And eventually, I was given a urostomy, which made life better. But having it also damaged my bowels. And I spent the next 20 years having little bits chopped off my bowels because they'd glue together, called adhesions. And gradually it'd take a bit more, and I became more and more incontinent. And eventually I ended up with a colostomy, which gave me back my life. I'd fought against being a double bagger for a long time, and I wish I hadn't, because I was fecally incontinent, and that's awful. I would feel I've got to go, and it would be I couldn't get out the chair or I couldn't get to the door.
Like a time bomb.
Oh, it was awful. One little time we were out skiing and we were sitting on the chairlift, and I said, Ken, I've got to go. And we got up the top, and I very, very gingerly went down a bit. There was a copse of trees. We went in, and I didn't quite make it in time. My husband came in, took off his own underwear and gave me his pants to wear.
Words fail me. That is an absolutely fantastic gesture of support and kindness, but we know that because we've had Ken on and he is that man. Can you explain what a urostomy is?
All right, a urostomy is for urine, hence the uroostomy. And it's used with part of the small bowel, the ileum, is attached to the urethras from the kidneys and made into one tube, which is then brought out through the stomach wall, folded back on itself and stitched. And urine comes out of that 24/7. It will constantly dribble. With the other stoma, there will be spells when it doesn't come. But with the urine, it always dribbles, which makes changing a bit harder because you're trying to put... You have to get the skin dry. And if it's constantly dribbling urine, it's very frustrating sometimes.
There's a knack, clearly, yeah.
It's luck as well. Yeah. It's best to do it on a totally empty stomach when you haven't drunk anything for quite a long time, and then you might get a minute.
Now, the impossible question, just to wrap up our discussions, what single piece of advice would you give somebody who's just heard that they have to have a stoma?
Don't panic. Life will go on.
Life in this groove is definitely going on. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've learned so much from this wonderful group this morning. Their compassion, their humour, it's been absolutely marvellous. And as we reach the end of our visit to Berwick Stoma Group, all that remains for me to say is to thank all the guests and Bobby for making this broadcast possible. As I said at the start of the programmes, there are dozens of groups like this one around the UK, and everybody here is imploring anyone who has this condition to get in touch with their local group. My name's Colleen Henderson-Hayward, and it just remains for me to say goodbye from all of us around the table here, including our producer, Tony Henk, hoping that we have shown the colorectal surgeon that indeed bringing a little sunshine back when life seems bleak. Now, come on, folks, dig in. There's tea, coffee in the pot. There's still some biscuits left.
All right, I want to know more about this lady's underwear.
Surgeon, misunderstood and much maligned. Slaving away in the heart of darkness, working where the sun don't shine.